Paging Dr. Strange, the Brinks truck is here, and it is backing up towards the hospital. You can hear the beeping.
Whoa, what is happening?
Dr. Strange has crossed the $600 million mark internationally, making it Marvel's highest earning single character film, franchise, movie,
gotcha.
Whatever you want.
Okay.
So you thought Tony Stark was the richest guy in the Marvel Universe. Not anymore.
Good. Good for Doctor Strange. I am happy for the Cumberbatch. I think I need to see it again.
Yeah, I think so.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that...
They all reward multiple viewings, generally.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that I need to... sometimes when you approach a film from a critical viewpoint, first time in, you need to see it more than once. You know, you need to watch it once to be like, well, this is where it's lacking here, here, and here. And then you need to watch it again because you've already know what's going to happen. So yeah. Maybe you can enjoy it
you
a little
can
bit
relax about letting your... This obsession that we have, especially in Western cinema, being surprised by stuff. Or like,
yes.
Oh, I'm waiting for the twist. You can just let that go and you can just enjoy what's playing out in front of you. And you know how it's going to play out.
Exactly.
And seeing the way that it plays out. I don't know what it is. And I didn't plan on this. I didn't want this to be the opening rant. But I don't get the obsession with knowing or not knowing, you know, being surprised by what's going to happen.
You don't get the obsession with being surprised?
For a particular... Like, if I'm watching a thriller or something that is sort of sold as who is the mysterious Mr. X or whatever, fine. But you look at other cinema, European cinema, especially Eastern cinema, like Japanese and Chinese cinema, they don't care about that. It's not about surprising anybody. The Greeks didn't care about that. In fact, the dramatic irony of you knowing what the main character was going to take 2 hours to figure out, even in like Shakespeare, it just wasn't a big deal. But we're so obsessed with like, oh, they were dead the whole time. Oh, no.
Well, but I think you can agree with this. I mean, you don't want to watch trailers that come out, the latest trailers right before the movie, because you don't want to be spoiled.
On the elements of the entire production.
Right.
I know Doctor Strange is going to win.
Well, of course.
And if he didn't win, it wouldn't be like, ooh, you surprised me. He didn't win. It wouldn't excite me because I was surprised about that. I just want to see a good story executed. I mean, we all understand the DNA of story, even if we're not writers or storytellers or screenwriters. Like, we understand. That's why when we see something and it doesn't feel right, you know, it doesn't impress us, it's because it didn't fulfill what it was supposed to. It didn't have the structure. Even if it's a curly Q interesting structure, it didn't have a proper structure. It's just like, it was just stuff that happened.
Right.
And so, like, if something happens that I didn't know was going to happen, or it's like, ooh, it's a surprise, that doesn't, how does it relate to what's going on? How does it relate to the journey of the characters involved? And how does it fit into that sort of puzzle?
Right. If it
whether
doesn't
it's a
fit,
Jenga
who cares
tower
if it's a surprise
or just a, yeah, Bridges of Madison County, 500 piece. That's my thing.
Yeah. I guess there's a part of me that some ways I wish I could be like, you know, there's a lot of people who go to films and they rate whether they like it or not. And yeah, that was good. Or eh. And that's it, you know, and it just has to be some level of entertaining to them. And that's all that they need from that.
They're not watching it critically.
Right.
Right. Which is fine.
It's totally fine. But I don't know how to do that anymore.
But I would argue, well, good. I would argue that if they applied, not to the point where I'm going to find a way to hate this movie, but if they just applied a little more criticalness, criticism, I guess is the right word, to their watching experience, they're going to find that they're going to like fewer movies.
Yes.
But they're going to enjoy, they're going to know why they like the ones that they do like even more. They will enjoy those more. It will reward them more than to just go to, and I'm just picking a franchise, I'm not picking on anybody, Transformers and being like, yeah, it was all
right. Right. Do you think that anybody, do you think that one reason why people aren't as critical is because they don't want to like less movies? They just want to,
you know, we have a,
is it conscious,
especially Americans,
all?
We have an immense capacity for self-deception.
That's
very
true.
And intellectual self-denial. But I don't think that you don't spend $14 and then that's on popcorn and then you haven't even bought your ticket.
Right.
To suppress like your desires to be satisfied artistically. Right. You're just not asking that.
Yeah, I think
of the film you're watching. Well, but once you start asking those questions, there are so many. There are films out there that you would have passed by before that will blow you away and that will haunt you. Not in like, ooh, But you know, that will stay with you for a long time, that you will think about continuing and will inform yourself as a consumer of art, mm-hmm. as a connoisseur, if you will.
Yeah. No, I sniff. I agree with you. And I, something that I've kind of noticed lately is I need to look at how I criticize things, because I don't know that I can really articulate that very well. And I would like to be able to do that better.
Well, I think it's just part of knowing, if you're complaining about something, like knowing why you're complaining about it.
Yeah.
Or absolutely. Like what it is that bugs you. And it's totally cool to see something and go, I don't know. I don't know why that bothers me.
I need to digest this.
But the other important thing is to not necessarily leave it there, you know, to look into that. Because it's going to help you realize what it is you don't like, and you can look for things you do like. Here's something I like. The cast of Marvel's Black Panther
yes.
is growing by leaps and bounds.
Absolutely.
It's kind like of a there's... Panther joke, I guess. It's
leaps and bounds.
Playing with the yarn ball of greatness. And I don't know. It is vomiting a...
what?
I don't know. Just thinking about what cats.
You took a wrong turn here.
What cats do?
They do that, but let's make it positive.
Getting a snake of diversity all over the Ooh. Carpet. No, but there's this cool graphic that's come out recently, and I'd love to point you in the direction of it, but it took me an hour to find it recently after I seen it before. But it's the cast of Black Panther, and it's all the people of color that are in it that have major roles.
Yes.
And there are 9 people. And just because we're news people, anyway, I'll just say all the names. It's Angela Bassett. It's Daniel Kaluuya. It's Denai Gurira, Michael B. Jordan, Chadwick Boseman, Forest Whitaker, Lupita Nyong'o, Winston Duke, and Florence Kasumba. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing.
And I like the fact that you're making this movie. You want actors of color. All right, you pull down Forest Whitaker. Sure. Denzel is too expensive. But you get Angela Bassett, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Who she is like the Marlon Brando in Superman in this thing. Like, yeah. She is like the big deal. But then you've got these other people. Like, I'm not familiar with some of these other people. Like, I don't know Florence Kasumba that well.
No, I don't either.
And I'm probably watching the wrong movies. Maybe she's really big in certain circles. But
yeah.
So I'm excited to see all these people. That was really uplifting. Now I'm going to make a joke.
Oh, boy.
I saw this. Somebody got a hold of this image, this really cool image. It's all like halves of their faces kind of lined up. And it was on Imgur, I think, and they stuck like one more at the end. They're like, Robert Downey Jr. And then it's him like from Tropic Thunder.
No. That's horrible.
He'll probably be in the film, though, to be fair.
Do you think I think it's more likely that Cap and Winter Soldier will be in the film. Because, well, the Winter Soldier... is in Wakanda at the end of...
Yeah, I was making a joke.
I know.
I was making a joke. Okay. Hey, speaking of criticism, Tropic Thunder. There's a movie that I just really didn't like, and I wasn't sure why, and then I thought about it, and I realized all the reasons why. But here's my question to everybody who thinks it's so great. Where's Tropic Thunder 2?
Nowhere.
Yeah. Now that we've lost all the Tropic Thunder fans. A lot of Tom Cruise fans out there. We know this about our audience. Just because a guy who everybody criticizes as being like he is one of the aliens from Scientology, who he's completely unable to connect with audiences generally when he performs.
Yeah.
Has one role where he's kind of fun. And then suddenly it's like, oh, my God, it's the best movie ever.
Yeah.
He's a problem. We should dive into him, or at least people like him someday. He's kind of a problem actor because I think we want to like him really bad. There's something about him that is attractive, and yet there is something about him that is incredibly off-putting.
I find him very off-putting.
I don't think he eats any pudding. And that's why he's got his abs. But he's very charismatic, and yet I don't know what it is about him as a person or a performer, but there is a disconnect. You know, it is a very shiny, glossy sort of attraction that is empty. He's like the most detailed mannequin ever.
Yeah.
And clothes look great on him.
Uh-huh.
Like a mannequin.
Maybe he's an android.
And at his best, he's had a few really great performances,
mm-hmm.
but only a few. And at his best, I think it's been with a director who has really
reached
pulled that out of him
out.
And,
yeah.
and probably said, Tom, don't do that. No, stop. Stop that. I know you always do that thing and people like it. But give me something else. Give me this thing.
Right.
You know, bring something else out. Don't be Tom Cruise. Don't be the guy that, you know, makes all the money producing things and starring in things and getting rid of thetans and all that. Jumping on couches. Like, just give me something.
Yeah.
Like Rock of Ages. Someday. Someday. We'll Crafty Services, someday on the show, we'll do a month of bad musical films.
Oh, wow.
Grease 2, Rock of Ages.
Paint Your Wagon.
Bad. It's got to be bad. Bad.
It can't be rated that highly.
Here's your challenge.
Okay.
You're going to find it, but you're going to wait on it, though, because we have to introduce ourselves. All right. We're going for 10 minutes. It is the Just Enough Trope podcast. I'm your host, Caliban, joined as always by my co-host.
Hi, I'm Yikon Han.
And you're here with us on a weird day. If this was a day, if this show was a day, we'd look out the window and it would be gloomy, but not raining. Then it would start to sprinkle a little bit. Then it'd do one of those things where the sun comes out.
This is very
and it's
specific.
Raining while the sun is shining. So you have to squint at the sun, and yet water is coming down. There's a double, nay, triple rainbow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then tsunami. So that's the kind of day it is. We are tossed and buffeted by elements, artistic elements, that we found in a particular movie we're going to talk about today, and also Hollywood as a whole. We are doing Crafty Services, as we mentioned at the beginning of the week, and we are doing a movie that I think we're going to have a lot to say about, not even about the movie necessarily, but about what it represents and what it possibly reveals about what's going on in Hollywood, or at least the arty side, down Art Street and Auteur Way. And that film is Knight of Cups by Terrence Malick.
Yep.
And it is a film that was we selected because, clearly, it's under 50% on Rotten Tomatoes. First rule, we're also trying to fit it into, or squeeze it into, if you will, a series about authors, films about content creators that is not supposed to necessarily, it's more, this is NaNoWriMo, it's November, it seems like a good month for writers.
Right.
It's not supposed to dovetail into our also series running currently on the show, Women's Rights, where we talk to and interview women content creators in sci-fi and fantasy. But we lucked out. It's kismet. They go right together into each other. And we're going to have a big discussion about that at the end of the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, Cal.
Your face says you aren't.
I'm trying to figure out how this dovetails into women's rights, because this is all about a man writing about himself.
You're doing your job so well.
So
there'll be a little something extra in your paycheck.
Okay.
And we'll have to cut all this out.
Stop. Yeah.
Step up on the mic a little bit there, too.
Well,
you're okay.
Stop. I read a little bit about the description of Knight of Cups, and we'll get more into this later, but it talks about how he's somebody in Hollywood, he's a script writer, and he's depressed. Did you get that he was depressed? He just kind of seemed like a weirdo to me.
I think depressed people do a lot less walking than he did.
And get a lot less tail
than he did. That's the mark of a depressed screenwriter, is that he is just pounding it out, but joylessly.
Yeah.
Joylessly.
Uh-huh. Next. I don't know. There were a lot of fun, like, pillow fights and running around the
number 19
hotel
next.
Rooms.
Yeah, well, you can have a sort of sad, dejected pillow fight. Yeah. He's just performing.
Okay.
He's just performing.
All right,
yeah.
Well,
he does quite a bit of walking for a depressed or even a real excited person, even a competitive walker. Like, there's more walking in this than the Dead Zone.
Yeah, he should have a dog, the amount of walks that he goes on.
If he did, the dog would be like, there's a lot of walking.
I can't take it anymore.
I'm a dog. And, yeah.
I'm going to refuse to walk.
Yeah.
So I did look up Paint Your Wagon.
Or maybe The Deer Hunter.
As well.
This is more walking than The Deer Hunter. I don't know. Go on.
So it's 27% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Really?
I don't know why you're so surprised.
Well,
it's notoriously thought of as kind of a weird film. And
oh,
like,
weird, for sure. Like John Waters is weird. And each one of those is at least 70% or higher, right?
I don't know.
It's on the list.
All right.
It's on the list.
Okay.
That's three.
Yeah. We'll think of a fourth one before the show's over.
We don't want to show people how the sausage is made. We don't want to show people how the sausage is branded and marketed, because we've pretty much made it at this point. Like, you're getting a glimpse into how the show works, the inner workings of the show.
Well, we find a theme and we stick with it.
Each week we find a theme and we beat it to death. Dissolve its body in a bathtub in Hell's Kitchen.
Oh my gosh, no. This is not Breaking Bad.
No.
Maybe we change the name of Craft of Services to Breaking something.
No.
I don't know what doing. Never mind.
Sometimes the sausage bits fall on the floor. But if it's the jungle, you just stick them right back in. Right?
Yeah.
All right. Let's make some news sausage. Fantastic Beasts, of course, came out last weekend, and it made $218 million in its global opening.
Yeah, that does not surprise me at all.
Yes, it's fairly impressive. It outperformed every other Harry Potter installment in South Korea and Russia, those markets.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. I'm not exactly sure why that is.
I don't know. Well, probably increased distribution.
Maybe.
Plus,
yeah.
Everything is like, what, 7-8 years behind there? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And if they're getting it at the same time, maybe this is an improvement.
They're like just getting yoga pants now. It's that sort of thing.
I bet Putin hates yoga pants.
Why would he hate them?
I don't know. He doesn't want anybody's legs to look more fabulous than his.
Mm. Oh, you say he hates wearing them is what you're saying.
He doesn't want other people to wear them.
They too effectively hide his thunder.
Yeah.
It made $75 million domestically just as of press time. So that's not bad.
No. It's not bad at all.
It's not like gigantically huge.
I think that people are divided about this film. And I can clarify that. I think that there are a lot of Harry Potter fans that are super excited.
Yeah, yeah.
And
but mathematically, they were looking for more like a $90 million opening.
Sure. Well, I could see that. Yeah. I do think that there are people out there who like the Harry Potter series, maybe aren't like super fans, but are a little like trepidatious about this new series.
There's probably also a lot of people who grew up with it, got to the last movie, enjoyed the books, enjoyed most of the films, the ups and downs, and went, okay, good. Like, I'm raising a child
it.
Now. Maybe yeah. I'll reintroduce it to them, but I don't need those newfangled Beetle the Bard stuff.
Yeah. And if I'm honest, like, the Beetle and the Bard was not very good,
yeah, I
in
think
my
that's
opinion.
The general consensus.
So, I don't know, and I
were
know...
Those, was that, I'm sorry to interrupt, was that Go written ahead. Before or after, or even published before or after the rest of the series?
It was published after the rest of the series came out.
Because I'm just wondering, I know that a lot of people have said, and rightly so, that the later books show, like, there's nobody at the wheel, like, editorially. Like, it's...
Well,
they're just letting
long.
Her do whatever she wants.
Yeah.
And each one of them could lose 100 pages and be better.
I think that's probably true. Okay, but, so, I mean, look at George Lucas. Like, after a while, didn't let... Like, they just let him do whatever he wanted,
yes.
too. So...
And James Cameron. All spoken about on our last show with our interview with Melissa F. Olsen.
Yes. So who was a fantastic guest.
Why repeat it here? let's talk about Rogue One, A Star Wars Story.
Let's.
Ticket pre-sales are pretty good. They are at upwards of 130 million right now.
Which reminds me.
Oh, yeah.
Writing
we should,
a note to myself.
We should remind our audience as well. Tickets go on sale, well, today. When you're hearing this, they go on sale Monday morning. So if you're going to get your pre-order tickets for Rogue One, get them now. That's pretty far ahead.
Yeah, wait, yeah. When does it release again? It's sometime in December, right?
December 16th is the opening weekend.
Okay, so, well, we're less than a month out now.
Yeah.
So,
they're saying 130 to maybe 150 million for that one.
Okay, so does this, I'm assuming Rogue One opens, they'll have showings on Thursday night,
Must. Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool.
They'd have to. Oh, boy, well, we'll get to this in a second, but there seems to be no end of celebrity deaths.
I know.
And we'll get to it. But also, in comparison to that, there seems to be no end to the money that people can spend on this. Like, we all know we have more disposable, quote-unquote disposable income now.
Yeah.
Hold on to that, because there's no telling where it's going to go once we go to war with China. But people can just... We had a Fantastic Beasts. We've got Disney, which we'll talk about in a second. We've got another Star Wars movie. At some point, you think that there would be audience fatigue. And already, they're 130 million up.
Yeah.
And this thing doesn't come out until December 15th is the Thursday of its opening weekend. So remember that date.
Yeah.
12/15. It's nuts.
Yes.
There's no limit to the money that people can spend on something that they want. So good news for content creators. Good news for studios.
Yeah, absolutely.
Except, come on, Sony. Make this happen.
Good news for Disney.
Or Paramount. Come on, Paramount.
Yeah.
Why are these studios having trouble when there is so much money in the mix?
Maybe they just don't have the right franchises that make the money.
I guess. It's also the fact that no movie has ever made a profit.
Yeah, I don't understand that. Can you explain that to me?
It's an attempt. A lot of financing deals with films are made on the basis of the profit that they make. You will receive like a percentage of it. Uh-huh. And so the most creative MC Escherist bookkeepers in the world are these guys that work for Hollywood studios, because they have to prove that the movie didn't make a profit, so that way they don't have to pay out, you know, points on the revenues.
That's so terrible.
It's awful. But so some guys like, well, you guys owe me money. No, mass. Oh, you know, we just barely broke even. Brinks right here. Yeah. Bring it back.
Yep.
It's shame. Shamefaced.
It is shamefaced. And it sounds like the same people that are working for Hollywood are working for Trump. And like, just.
Whoa, you did that.
I did.
You
that.
Made it political.
I did. Sorry.
No, I think they're better than them. Trump should get those guys.
All right. Ideas.
Well, anyway, let's talk about the last film release that I want to talk about. We're talking about Disney's Moana.
Yes.
Which, by all accounts, is one of, if not the best films that DC, not even the right comic company, Disney has ever released.
Okay.
People are
flipping out about it.
They are absolutely flipping out about it. It made about $81 million at the box office this weekend domestically, which is behind only Frozen, which made $93.6 million.
Oh, wow.
So it is like the second biggest Disney open ever.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Huge. It's 98% on Rotten Tomatoes, as far as you care about that. Everybody loves it. It's got The Rock in it. So he is now the most like successful and highest paid movie star of all time. So I don't. Yeah, what can you say? And here's our review.
We need to see this.
I'm always busy on holiday weekend. How do people have time to go see movies? Like, I gotta go see like a couple different families, and I gotta sit down and create a conveyor belt of food that's gonna go into my mouth.
I think that
then there's the recovery.
I think that people go with when they are with their families sometimes on the holidays. So
that's nice.
I
should have said about Rogue One, it's gonna be the first Star Wars movie without an opening crawl.
Really?
Yes, they have committed to this.
Huh.
They want to say Star Wars, but not Star Wars. And honestly, for me, Star Wars isn't Star Wars unless there's an opening crawl. But I'm willing to go with them on this one because, yes, the original New Hope has always had an opening crawl. It just didn't say A New Hope at the beginning.
Okay.
In the first release. I'm willing to go with them because I agree. Perhaps the saga of the Skywalkers or of Star Wars is a crawl. If you want to make a different movie and make it and then reshoot it a bunch to make it really more what it was before, then this is probably the way to go. But you better come up with something else, because when this thing starts and ain't no blah, 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 and there's no fanfare, like, what am I watching?
Yeah.
That's been the only thing that has identified. Every single piece of Star Wars is that. You play a video game, you watch Clone Wars or the Rebels or whatever. It's all got that thing. And you go get a taco from Taco Bell during a Star Wars promotion, you open up the wrapper, blah. So I don't know, how do you feel about this?
I'm not sure how I feel about it. I mean, they make sure that you know it's a Star Wars story, and yet they're not going to have the opening crawl. So do they want to have their font and eat it too, or
have their font and eat it too, Star Wars font?
Yeah, or you know, like, why this choice? I mean, I understand this is a different story than the main story, so I guess maybe that's why they want to differentiate.
That's absolutely what they're doing. I wanted your opinion about whether it's a Star Wars movie or not. Doesn't matter. Let's talk tragedy. We lost another person to 2016, which has just been a ravenous wood chipper for famous, if somewhat not in the spotlight, actors and personalities. And the last one that has happened was Fidel Castro. He's we'll skip that one. I want to talk about Ron Glass, best probably known to our audience as Shepherd Book in Firefly, but known to myself and some old people as Ron Harris, as Detective Harris on Barney Miller.
Yeah.
And he passed away at 71.
He was a really great actor.
He was. And he was one of those guys that sort of lived it. If you see interviews with him, I'm not saying that he's like Avery Brooks level, but he's a centric guy.
Yeah,
like
sure.
He's a fun guy.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that makes him a great performer is you don't know what he's going to do necessarily on stage, on film, or in real life. Like, he just seems like a real kind of kook, but in a good way.
Right.
Yeah. He was born in Indiana in 1945. Okay. So he did okay. And he got his start at the Guthrie. Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and he went on to do a lot of TV roles in the 70s, but then settled down and did Barney Miller for like 7 years, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, he'll be missed for sure.
He will.
And I know that a lot of Firefly fans are really upset
yeah.
about this, but you made the point that his character has already passed away, so.
Well, I was being, I was trying to cope and be cynical.
Okay.
He was also on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in like the pilot, but I don't think he ever really
came
back.
Was he really?
Yeah.
No.
So anyway.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, that's too bad. I am tempted to cynically, again, start some kind of like Deadpool. Not that one.
No.
We've said that. He's going to show up anytime now.
Yeah.
We're way past the limit.
Yeah.
Like trying to guess who's going next.
Yeah. I don't even
You know
even
who's not
going to
go
there.
Next?
Who?
Brian Dennehy.
Yeah.
Who we'll talk about later when we talk about Knight of Cups. But
yeah.
That guy, he's going to put us all on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
That guy.
We've lost a lot of really great, talented actors and performers, musicians this year. And it has just been, I think, overall, just a shitty year in general. And I've actually seen a Christmas ornament that you can get or make, like a do-it-yourself dumpster
like
fire of 2016.
Oh.
Like there's a dumpster that is labeled 2016 and there is a fire coming out.
I thought it was like maybe like an evil eye to like scare away like the you know the bad things.
Oh,
or like
sure.
Maybe a little like doorpost with some blood on it to be like, angel of death, keep moving.
Right, right.
Well, enjoy your dumpster fire now until they push the dumpster fire off a cliff into the garbage dump made of burning dumpsters that 2017 is going to be. End with joke.
Oh my gosh.
They're gonna put me in the movies. They're gonna make a big star out of me. We'll make a film about a man that's sad and lonely. And all I gotta do is act naturally. Well, I'll bet you I'm a
gone. Do you want to open this like a Terrence Malick movie?
Sure, let's do it.
How many days are in the life of a podcaster? How many times must they walk this road?
I've loved you ever since I met you, but I don't know if we can be together. I can't quit you podcasting.
That's
not Terrence Malick anymore.
No, it'd be more like, sometimes you get the cups, sometimes you get the knives. The knights, I don't know. We're not. Hey, that's his particular talent, I guess.
I guess.
If you have a video camera and a microphone, then you can make a Terrence Malick movie too.
Hey!
Got to pull it in your backyard, stomp around it for a little bit, and then come back on and just read, I don't know, like the Rubaiyat. You know, or maybe Ecclesiastes, like
sure.
4:13,
or perhaps some religious texts, and I'm not talking like the Bible. I think we need to get
like TV Guide.
I think we need to get like even more removed than that. You know, like maybe something that
sound of the ocean.
Yes,
go and then better a poor but wise youth. Than an old but foolish king who no longer knows how to heed a warning. That was Ecclesiastes 4:13.
Yes, yes.
I got the fastest
like
Google
that.
Figures in the West.
Like that. You know, or I don't know, gosh, even something from Gilgamesh or something. I don't know. It just seems like it's like
no. Oh, so
something philosophical. We're not really sure if this is,
yeah.
You know, do we even learn Christian Bale's character's name
Rick.
In this?
Rick.
Does anybody say it like once?
I don't know.
Dennehy is like, oh, my son.
Yep.
My son. Don't be like
son.
Me.
Right, brick wall. Right.
My son.
Right, fire escape I'm standing on.
I know.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. You mentioning the Upanishads or whatever puts me in the mind of, yeah, the fact that, well, it's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about appropriation.
Okay.
Because.
Yay.
It's literally like he's got a Wheel of Fortune spin board or something like that somewhere that he's going, zzzz, L.A. Scream Writer, the Rubaiyat by Omar Khayyam, four girlfriends. Okay, let's do it. And then there's another board that just has 16 slots and they all say water. And he's like, water, 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 water. Water, water everywhere and not a script to find.
Yeah.
Terrence Malick. Are we done? Are we done?
I think we're done.
Sadly, we just started. We're talking about Knight of Cups, the 2016 theatrical release date film by Terrence Malick. An experimental drama film. Now, we're going to talk about that in a second. Mm-hmm. This is not an experimental film. What would you consider an experiment? Here's an experimental film. Guy sleeps for 8 hours. Thank you, Andy Warhol. Amazing. Keep your wig on. Like, right? This is a Hollywood filmmaker who, took a break for 20 years. You know, he released Days of Heaven in 1978. Which, you know, was a lot like this. In fact, it was contentious getting it made. A lot of his crew walked off the set and quit because he was making a film like this. And then it came out. People said, I don't really know. Cinematography is great, like they say about his movies now. And he went, screw it, moved to France for 20 years and became this, like, big ghost story. Like, where did Terrence Malick disappear to? He came back in, like, 97 for Thin Red Line, which was a war film.
Yes.
Very much like this. And this is how he makes movies. He just keeps making these same movies that don't have a script, and they just feature characters, or actors improvising as characters with dialogue that may or may not make it into the final cut, and then a ton of voiceover, which is character-inflected, you know, inner monologue sort of voiceover. So a man and a woman are walking down a beach together. They are sort of languorously sort of walking, casting glances at each other. And then the voiceover is like, should I tell him? Does he know? Like that kind of thing.
Right.
Like,
or maybe they go swimming with all their clothes on.
Oh, there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
Don't give it away. So that's what we're talking about. As far as stars go, we've long reached the point where however you feel about him, he is somebody people want to work with.
Yes.
Because of his legend. And so this stars improbably, I believe, Christian Bale, Cate Blanchett, Natalie Portman, Ben Kingsley narrates it. It has Brian Dennehy, as we mentioned before, playing the Rick, the character's father, the main character's father.
Yep.
And amongst a bunch of other people, sometimes literally themselves, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
Which is weird.
It is pretty weird. Other than that, let's see, what else can we say about it? It is, like you said, it's about this guy named Rick. He is a screenwriter living in L.A., and like almost all Terrence Malick films, he is a middle-aged or early middle-aged man of some success, usually upper middle class, who is I thought that
went
without
saying. Sorry, I had to put that in there.
Yep, that's why we talked about Black Panther at the beginning of the show. And he feels empty. He feels unfulfilled.
And according to the description, he is depressed.
Yeah, according to the script, which you don't believe, and we'll talk about in a second.
Yeah.
Like, save it. And so all of his movies follow that character trying to get out of this loop of sorrow or whatever it is. This particular movie is structured in 8 or 9 parts, if you will, all based on one of the major arcana of the tarot deck.
Yep.
I think it's pretty thin.
Yeah.
It's like Karen Carpenter thin. But that's his structure, and so we're going to go with it.
Mm-hmm. And when you say Karen Carpenter thin, you are referring to her weight and not the depth of her songwriting.
Her songwriting's amazing.
I know!
Of course.
Of course. Just wanted to clarify.
Yes. No, it really was the hack joke that you expect from me by now. So let's, insofar as you can, let's go over, I guess, the quote-unquote plot, like what happens
what
in
plot?
This film. All right, let us finish.
Okay.
Fun thing that I like to do, doesn't sound much, nobody cares, if you go to the Wikipedia page for this film, which, I mean, we used as a guide for this, they list the 8 arcana, major arcana from the tarot deck that represent the acts in this film. They spell judgment wrong. There's no E in judgment. It's an easy mistake to make, but a grade level 1 proofreader would have picked that out. So nobody has ever looked at we are the first people to ever look at this page besides the Terrence Malick super freak that put it together in the first place.
Okay, interesting. So I took notes during the film and I also wrote judgment wrong.
Well, it was spelled right in the film.
I know. I'm just saying that I spelled it wrong, like the person on the...
Sure.
So I'm trying to give them a little bit...
You are not an editor or a proofreader.
No, I'm not.
So, yes, all we get from this guy, and we'll also be comparing this film to his other sort of releases of late, We'll talk about Tree of Life from 2011 mm-hmm. and To the Wonder from, I think, 2013 or 14. His movie before this, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I guess we could talk about Thin Red Line, too. Why the hell not?
I don't think I've actually ever seen
it. I'll talk about Thin Red Line. Okay. Why the hell not? Yeah, he is a screenwriter, and he is a guy who walks around a lot,
yep.
as you do, has an internal monologue, and he finds solace. We are shown, it's show not tell, right? We're certainly shown.
Yes.
In the company of women. And so he's got to deal with it. These women also represent something that he's looking for, or certain phases of his life. Which is kind of what the tarot thing is supposed to mean. I think the tarot connections are super tenuous.
They are.
But whatever. So it doesn't matter. And so he is a guy who... Oh, and I should also mention, the movie features, especially in the beginning, but throughout, quotes and allusions to works like The Pilgrim's Progress
mm-hmm.
By Bunyan. I think that's kind of the main sort of connection or allegory here, is that he is literally Christian Bale. Like...
Right.
Like Christian, the hero of Pilgrim's Progress, who, yeah, see, I'm paying attention. Terry, I got you, baby.
Oh.
He is going through this thing where he is on a journey, if you will. He is, like Christian, bouncing between temptation and falling and sins and things like that, hopefully elevating to a level where he can put his burden down or what have you.
Sure.
And then there's also things he quotes from this thing called the Hymn of the Pearl.
Right.
The Pearl thing comes back a lot.
Yep.
Yeah. And also a epic poem, the Tale of the Western Exile, which is by a Persian philosopher. So there you go. Pretty close to what we were doing when we were joking around before. And yeah. And so that's what it is. Mm-hmm. How do you know he's a screenwriter?
Well, I know he's a screenwriter because... In the very beginning, he is with other screenwriters talking about a script. And Dan Harmon is there.
Yeah, Dan Harmon's in this.
And I can hear him more than I actually saw him in the film.
I know. And this, I think, is Malick's... in fact, I know this is Malick's process. He probably does really long takes.
Mm-hmm.
There is... you can actually read this online. They describe it as torpedoing. So this is what Malick does. Christian Bale did not get a script for this film.
Nope.
He gave Bale a book to read called The Moviegoers, which actually Malick worked on adapting into a screenplay in his 20-year exile. And so he gave him to read this book to read. He described the character to him. And then otherwise, when they shot scenes, Bale had no script.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell because he doesn't talk at all. Like, at all.
Nope.
And then the other actors, as far as I know, didn't get any specific script, really, but they were given impressions, something to achieve within the scene, and then they just went. And so he wanted Bale to be at sea, if you will, to be out of sorts and be reacting to what these other actors would come in and cause as a complication in the scene.
Yeah.
I don't, you know what? I tend to think that Bale is a good, a very studied actor.
Mm-hmm.
But just because you can do one thing doesn't mean you can do everything. I think he's probably not a very good improviser. Not that you would... I think Malick was completely happy with him just walking around with a kind of confused, embarrassed smirk on his face.
Yeah.
For the character. But that was Bale doing that. Bale was very uncomfortable because I don't think Bale is a guy that could just throw in and just, all right, let's just do this scene. What do we got? We need a profession, a place, you know, and a president. Yeah, I think that he just didn't know what he was doing. And he said so in interviews that he didn't even know what the movie was really about. He was just there. And I think that's a bad way to make a film.
I do too. And I think if you're going to give people, you know, pages and not really a script, I think that's fine. But then you need to give that to everybody. So, and even if it's, you know, I've done like acting exercises before where you're just given information about your character and other people are given information about their characters, but you don't get to share that information. So then it's kind of like a quote unquote more realistic thing. I could see something like that.
And it's hard to communicate, I think, you've got all the time in the world, you'd think, because it's a film. You can shoot as long as you want. You can edit whatever you want.
These long takes.
But the things that they are delivering are not particularly strong, complicated things. Like a guy, I think Brian Dennehy could probably do that forever. But what are they having him do? I'm your dad. I'm very rich. I am disappointed in you because you never made anything out of yourself. I'm disappointed in you because I'm a businessman and you're a writer and I don't respect that. And now I'm getting old. And so I'm losing it all. My kingdom is coming to nothing. Wow. So never seen that before in any kind of film.
And I think that they also are trying to portray him as, you know, just becoming more senile.
That comes through. And I actually don't really know how Brian Dennehy's doing these days. I was going to say one thing, though. Brian Dennehy, I haven't seen him visually in a while, or just like seen him, his face. You know, he is not young. He is old, and he's starting to look old. But his voice is still, he is Brian Dennehy.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder, what the hell is Michael Wincott doing to himself that just... Michael Wincott has sounded like Cousin Guy in Robin Hood for the last 30 years, and Brian Dennehy sounds better than I do.
Just chewing cigarettes. Just chewing them.
Glass.
Yep.
Motor oil. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Got to get that real raspy sound.
Yeah. He's in a star wagon. Mr. Wincott, you need on set. Just one moment. I'm ready. So let me tell you, I'm your agent. So we know that. And what I was going to say about the Dan Harmon thing, this is how it started the whole thing, is that I bet Dan was down for like doing 4 hours. Like, I bet they did like a whole scene about how they're trying to rework this guy's script into, because apparently Rick is like a comedy writer. I think that comes across. He's supposed to write comedies.
Well, maybe that's why there are so many actual comedians in the film.
Right, but then Dan Harmon is like, his only line is like, we want your permission to listen to me for a second. You know, we want to make this a drama for a second. Which is, maybe he's doing some kind of meta joke. Not Harmon, but Malick in saying, oh, this is a comedy, but it's not a comedy. Anyway, that's how we know he's... We also know two agents come to him and they go, we got a big deal for you. This is a real big deal. So otherwise, never writes once. And we pick this because...
Writing.
Well, because I want to see a Terrence Malick movie. But I also... Yeah, because he's a writer. He never creates a single thing. He actually creates one thing that dies near the end of the movie, and we'll get to that. Dark.
Very dark.
And you'll know why when we get there.
Yeah.
So he meets a succession of women. Now, we want to talk about women and men, and we want to talk about how men see women and how Terrence Malick sees men seeing women. But I think one thing is kind of weird that I have to cop to is that there is a succession of like actresses, famous and not, that show up in this movie. And I think I knew all of their names.
That's weird.
What does that say about me?
I think that's weird.
Yeah, I think it's weird too.
I think you got a problem.
But these chicks keep popping up.
Or you have similar tastes as Mr. Malick.
Oh, Mr. Malick loves beautiful women.
Yeah. He's had three wives. He's had his third.
Well, I mean, how That's old are they compared bad. To him?
I actually don't Let's know not. The answer to that. Let's not,
not
get
to
into that.
Personally.
No.
No, but he's like David Lynch in that, like, he loves beautiful women.
Sure.
And he's putting these women. I mean, look at his last movie. It's with Rachel McAdams and Olga Kurylenko. Or Tree of Life.
Yeah, Jessica Chastain.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that's... Okay, that's what he's doing. Mm-hmm. Fine. And that's kind of what his avatars in the movies are doing as well. They're just burning through these chicks.
Yeah.
He originally meets a girl played by Imogen Poots, who is like your manic pixie dream girlfriend.
Yep.
And I thought he meets her, first of all, you can forgive me for this. He meets her in the hotel or in the lobby of a swanky LA hotel. Mm-hmm. She is in 6-inch heels and a pink wig. This is a hooker. He has met a hooker.
I don't know.
Well, apparently, it turns out she's not a hooker. So, whatever.
No.
And he chases her around a hotel room. Later on...
He chases a lot of ladies around hotel rooms.
Yes. He makes friends. He tries to involve himself. It's not actually clear if he does or not. With this woman played by Frida Pinto.
Yep.
Slumdog Millionaire is probably where you remember her from. Who plays like this model. Who seems like she's sort of getting sucked into like the LA scene, mm-hmm. but then kind of rejects it. Or at least it's like, once again, because women are either Madonnas or whores.
Yeah.
She's like too pure to be sort of corrupted by it. Like she doesn't fit. And so she kind of drifts away from it.
Yeah. Like he's more into her than she is.
Yeah. And
him.
So the next woman that he goes with is a stripper.
Yep.
Played by Teresa Palmer. So he flips right over on that.
Yep. And they go to Vegas
and
together.
And they go to Vegas, baby. Yep. And then he finally ends up with a married woman played by Natalie Portman.
Yeah.
Who, Nat.
What?
I bet she's a much better, like, UN ambassador than she is an actress. Never been super impressed. Except, no, that's not true.
I was going to say.
The Professional. Like, yeah. One of the best performances I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And that was it. She spent it all.
Really early.
Yeah.
She was, like, what, 9?
She should have just got a law degree. I think she's, well, I mean, she's got some kind of degree from Harvard. But anyway. Yeah. Passable. Does okay in this. Mostly because she gets a scene where... Okay, we're going to improv. You've just lost a baby and you feel really bad about it.
You get to
or
ugly cry.
Or you got
cry.
An abortion.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so ugly cry. We know she knows how to ugly cry.
Yeah.
And so she serviceably ugly cries for this scene.
Which, okay.
And she doesn't know if the baby is Rick's or her husband's.
Yep.
It's just a mess. It's sort of the end point of him riding this slope down, you know. Every choice is worse than the next. And now he's, you know, cheating on this, or he's with this woman who's cheating on her husband. And
we didn't mention Kate Blanchett.
We're getting to it.
Okay.
They're apparently not using protection as they're chasing each other around hotel rooms.
Oh, that's not fun.
Nobody has sex in this movie. There isn't a single person that has sex. Just people chasing each other around hotel rooms.
Yeah, pretty much.
And like pushing each other up against windows or tenting under sheets. And like laughing.
Yes.
That's something he likes to do. He's done it in a few films now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. For sure.
What the hell?
Or go swimming with all their clothes on.
Oh, I fell in the water.
Oh, no.
Oh, it represents nothing.
Playfulness.
And so that is entitled Death. There's an actual death. That's the biggest obvious connection I can think as far as the major arcana, the card fits in. And then after that, without any like coming back from that, that, I guess, is the catalyst which makes him decide he's going to get his life together or something.
I don't know.
And then we run into Isabel Lucas.
Yeah.
Which is a naked blonde lady who's running around.
Yeah.
And we don't know if she's real or if she just represents. Because there's no card, but apparently the last sort of segment, the last chapter of the film is entitled Freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Isabel Lucas is real or not real. Movie's over. Now we can talk about Kate Blanchett if you want.
I just want to say real quick before we talk about Kate Blanchett, it was not very clear to me whether or not the baby had died or she was just upset.
It was aborted.
There was an abortion.
There was a line that she says something to the effect of like, I've done this. This has happened like 3 times before, but
I didn't catch
but it's
that.
Somehow it's still sad. She says that ironically as she's crying. I don't think I made that up.
You probably didn't, but I couldn't understand what she was saying underneath all the ugly crying.
Ugly cry, yeah.
And I heard her say, I forget about it. And then for a little while, and then I remember.
The election. Stop making it political.
Stop. You did that. but it wasn't clear to me. And maybe it's just because of the ugly crying and the torpedo-ness. But I was just like, what is happening?
Ugly crying and the torpedo-ness.
And then it was over. And then you go on the Wikipedia. Page, and I don't know, are we to believe that everything that happens is sequential, or is it just kind of all over the place?
You know, it doesn't have to be, but I think we are to believe, because this is where Kate Blanchett comes in, is that he shows up and starts hanging out with Kate Blanchett. Not sure they're ever in a hotel room together, so I guess they don't rekindle their relationship, but they were married previously.
Yeah, she's his ex-wife.
Yes. She, even though they are probably very similar in age, the actors, I think she is supposed to be an older woman. So now, of course, you got Madonna on Horror, you got Maiden, Mother and Crone. She was like, they were married when he was very young, and she was like sort of a guide to him. To, you know, like an older woman, like a Mrs. Robinson kind of thing.
Sure.
You know, not that old, though, but just sort of opening him up to new things.
She has this one line, like,
we're getting to it.
Didn't have a baby.
We're almost there.
And he was like, I don't know. And she was like, well, I was.
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing I like about her, I like a lot of things about Kate Blanchett, although I think that long ago she figured out what people liked about her, and she's just kind of been doing that for a while. Like, I don't think I've seen a real strong original performance from her in a while. And then it's like, she was in Blue Jasmine. Yes, she was good in Blue Jasmine. Yes, she was good in Carol. Like, but generally that's not what she's doing. She just kind of shows up and goes like, no, I've got a Southern accent, and it's Kate Blanchett, everybody. You know what I mean?
I think I know what you mean.
I don't demand much from people who can't give much, and I demand a lot from people who can.
And she can give a lot.
And she comes to play in this movie.
Yeah.
She's not given much to do. There was a lot of the same walking around, this time through like what I guess was their house or something.
There are a lot of homes that we see in
this. Just people's homes.
The transitions are not clear.
And the voiceover, there's constant voiceover in this film. It isn't just Rick or Christian Bale's character. In fact, it's very often not.
Mm-hmm.
Every time a character comes in, now it's their voiceover. There's more voiceover than Dune in this film.
Yeah. I mean, there's more voiceover
and that's for
than,
the Lynch fans
than
out there.
Actual like dialogue.
There's there's more voiceover than an audio described performance of a silent film.
Yes. I would agree with that.
So three sniffs. And so she comes in and immediately she's like, did you think that when I said she comes in and like you immediately know that it's her, because I feel like, I don't know, Teresa Palmer, who plays the stripper, comes in. You're like, okay, this is a woman's voice. Oh, it's got an Australian. Okay, I guess that's Teresa Palmer.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, Kate Blanchett's Australian.
Yes.
But she comes in immediately and she's just ready to play. Like I'm in a Terrence Malick movie. Let's do this.
Right.
I think I asked you when we were watching it. Do people know, like when they get hired to do Terrence Malick, do they come in? And immediately, like, oh no, this is it. Usually, it's like Tom Cruise. Would he come in and he wouldn't be like, "Hey, everybody, who wants some ice cream?" It'd be more like, "My father, you have left me." Like immediately, they're like doing a thing.
I think you.
It'd be
have
like when an actor
that.
Who has done, I don't know, Broadway, Neil Simon is like, "Oh, now I'm going to do Shakespeare," and he's like, "Forsooth." It's like you don't have to do that. We can do this all kinds of ways.
Right. Do you think that so they show Kate Blanchett at the end when he's talking about the pearl again. Do you think that
I'm lost on the pearl.
I
got no
idea.
Do you
think that she is his pearl? She is his saving grace he should have stayed.
You know,
with her?
I don't know what the pearl is and I'm not going to look it up. There's a parable in the Bible about a pearl of great price, mm-hmm. Quote unquote, where a guy it's about finding some ideal or finding something that you want and doing whatever you can to sort of get it. And I think the pearl's supposed to represent the kingdom of heaven or whatever the sacrifices you're going to make to get the ultimate, you know, sort of prize.
Mm-hmm.
This guy finds a pearl or something that's in a field or I don't know. And he sells all of his things, everything he's got, so he can buy the land, you know, or buy the pearl.
Sure.
And then he's got the pearl. But I'm like, well, you can't eat a pearl.
No.
Some of these, not very practical. Some of these parables.
No.
So it's that. So I'm not sure if it's that, because what in this case is the pearl? Is it self-respect? Which I assume he lacks because he's
I think it's almost
chasing
self-identity.
Lots of ladies through. Yeah. Or yeah. But who cares? Okay. We can't hold back anymore. What is the big conflict here? You. Terrence Malick, as a privileged white filmmaker, I assume that, sure, everybody has dark nights of the soul. Everybody has crises of conscience or belief. But what do you have to really say here? And all of your protagonists, if it's not a war movie,
right.
Like Thin Red Line, but even then, tend to be upper middle class or upper class white guys who are like, it's tough. I just got all these ladies all the time. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, how does that, like, Precious knocks you out there?
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, what about real problems?
Yeah.
Why am I supposed to care at all?
Well,
as a filmmaker, why do you think that you have to tell this story over and over and over again? Because as a filmmaker, you have decided that you're going to challenge. This is the thing that I like about him. And I actually really love Tree of Life still. And we can talk about that in a second. Because I know that you don't like it. But he's a guy who said, guess what? I did it. I almost got fired in 1978. And I still want to do it now. I want to challenge what everybody thinks of as the typical narrative structure of a Hollywood film.
Mm-hmm.
Why does... We get the thing to the thing, the guy goes to the thing, he shoots the thing, the guy in the end. I don't care about any of that. I care about emotions. I care about visuals. I care about pondering things. I want to make a tone poem that is 2 hours long.
Yeah.
Possibly a noble cause.
Mm-hmm.
But in so doing, why is he telling the same story over and over again?
I don't know.
Tree of Life features, we haven't even mentioned it because it barely features in the film, but Rick has lost a brother. At the beginning of the film, there's an earthquake, but it's supposed to represent, you know, his life being shaken up. His brother has died. His other brother, played by Wes Bentley, who, P.S., Wes Bentley, please quit. Let's go fund him. Let's kickstart him. Wow. Let's try to get him out of the business. He's not good at anything. So sorry, that's the only attack I'm really going to make. The rest of them are going to be analyses that turn into attacks. Terrence. Why? What is he? Tree of Life, same thing. Sean Penn's brother dies.
Yeah.
Oh, my life. Oh, dinosaurs. Like, right?
But at least to the Wonder features, there.
To the Wonder features, you know, Ben Affleck he's contemplating the death of his relationship with so-and-so as he moves into one with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
He's telling the same story over and over again.
Yes.
Why doesn't he Jackie Robinson. All right, let's do it. Let's walk around baseball fields and, like, talk about slavery and stuff. Pick anything.
Yeah.
Do you think he's doing it?
I think he's doing it almost because it's a story of his own life, except told slightly differently. But I don't know why he feels compelled to do it.
I'm not prepared.
Ways.
Not going to look it up. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe growing up in Texas, his brother died or something like that. I don't know.
I mean, I feel like that's a thing. But I don't know why he feels compelled to tell the scene. It's unlike, you know, Blade Runner, where it has to be reshot and recut and redone. You know, he's taking basically the same story, but redoing it. So, I mean, does he feel like he hasn't perfected it?
I don't think that he feels like I don't think he knows he is. I don't think he's aware of it.
Okay.
That or he's super comfortable giving us the same thing over and over again. If I digitally blurred out the face of the main character and then I just showed you, like, a 30-second clip from one of his films, would you be able to tell which film it was from?
I don't know. I mean, I want to say that I feel like the colors in Tree of Life tend to be
very bright.
More lush.
The colors in To the Wonder are very muted, yes.
And I think that the colors in this are pretty muted as well.
I think there's just less color to see. It's all, you know, white buildings in New York, or
in L.A.,
and then...
I mean, the scene in Las Vegas is very
bright. Yeah, but there's
bright.
A lot of marble there, and it's all deserts and things like that. So, yeah, it's bleak.
Yes.
Which gives way to the lushness that we get at the end when there's the naked chick in the swimming pool. So, I don't know. Oh, I want to like art. I want to approve art. I want to, like, the rubber stamp in Top Secret. Find him and kill him. I want to give a rubber stamp that says, let him go. Let him go, boys.
Yeah.
Let him do his thing. But... I want to kill the inventor of the Steadicam after watching movies like this. It's like, you have not, as a filmmaker, can you compose a shot? It's one thing that let's drive down the road. Ooh, we're on the PCH or whatever. And then we'll just, maybe sometimes it's upside down.
Yeah.
Or like we pan up to like a plane flying by. This is all film school type stuff. Like what's the meat and potatoes? Like what's the structure of what you are trying to do? It's all just this Steadicam stuff. And then he uses all these things that he's used in all of his films. Like, oh, now it's video and not film. That means that it's a flashback. This is his childhood. Or like the fisheye lens, you know, from a low angle. Oh, he's a baby crawling through his yard and his brothers are playing.
Right, right. Well, I guess what was frustrating for me is I feel like I know I've said I didn't like The Tree of Life, but I feel like I liked The Tree of Life more than I liked this film. And I'll tell you why. Because I feel like when I watched The Tree of Life, I feel like I experienced emotions and I went through emotions and there was more of a plot to that.
There is absolutely a plot, although I wouldn't say plot so much as storyline, because plot seems to say A to B to blah, blah, blah. And Malick has no interest in plot.
Right.
And actually, as somebody who is sick of a lot of Hollywood movies, I'm cool with, you know, with jettisoning plot.
Sure.
But you need to have storyline and development.
Absolutely.
And Sean Penn, as trite as it is, he feels bad and he's questioning life and his existence when he hears that his brother dies. And we go through the entire movie from the dinosaurs to God knows when. And he finds acceptance through religion, I guess. So controversial, Terrence Malick. He's he's kind of like so traditionalist. It's like, it's avant-garde.
Yeah.
but you're right. I mean, there is a more of a, okay, I see how we got here. I want to strangle Emmanuel Lubezki.
Okay, why is that?
He is a very talented, probably the hottest cinematographer out right now, who made like Children of Men
mm-hmm.
with Cuarón, right? Mm-hmm. Alfonso Cuarón. Tree of Life. He's doing all of Iñárritu's movies now.
Sure.
He did Birdman, Revenant, so on and so forth.
Gorgeous films.
Yes, he created, yes, absolutely all. And sometimes, I disagree, but sometimes people like Iñárritu have something to say and we can get that across and then have a really good looking film too. But I think he indulges the worst of Malick's sort of impulses about this beautiful cinematography, because once he's got something like that, the picture that tells a thousand words, then it just leaves Malick to go, oh, well, screw it. We don't even need the storyline about the kid in Texas when he's in the 50s. Forget that. We'll just, it's all walking.
But walking. I know. But my problem with that is just that I didn't get that Christian Bale's character was, quote unquote, depressed. I didn't feel that. I didn't. And I feel like I should have felt that. I should have felt that, like, so deeply that, like, he's so lost. And but then I...
Well, he's lost because he was walking. He wasn't... He was,
I know. He's walking and he's having all this sex. Like, so it's just, he's so lost. I gotta get an
Uber. Can we get an Uber out here?
Yeah.
He doesn't need Uber, though, because he's got his classic convertible car.
That's another element. Walking and driving.
That's another element that you put things in that... And we always laugh at, like, oh, it's Screenwriting 101. I wonder if that thing's going to come back. But you're telling a story, and there are elements that we expect to see and to return. Go back to the mythology. Go back to, like, the earliest stories.
Yeah.
You've got Thor. You've got a hammer. You know, you've got his goats or something. These are all elements that we expect to be involved in the story. And not just Thor walking on the Bifrost, and he's thinking about stuff, and like, I really like mead or whatever. Like, and so I thought, oh, this car, it represents what he thinks of himself. He's
sure.
Middle aged, but he's young middle aged.
Classic.
He's the guy who is, he's too old to be doing this anymore, and that's his problem. He's midlife crisis, arrested development, that whole thing, and so he has this like cool classic convertible, and I thought, oh, he drives us around everywhere. He drives his ladies around in it, and they get up and do little dances because we're on minute 13 of this take, and they don't know what to do, and Terrence hasn't said anything in a while.
Yeah, and we're all manic pixie dreams.
Yes, we are, even when we're 45. And so I thought, oh, at some point, he's going to crash this car, you know, or it's going to get crashed or wrecked or something like that. And so that'll be like the end of the second act, and he'll like now be faced with the fact that he can't continue this lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
No,
that doesn't happen.
No.
It's almost like Malick is like, aha, you thought that was going to happen, so I'm not going to make that happen.
Yeah.
But I guess one thing, and it's not like a film needs this necessarily, but I almost feel like it does. Like, I'm fine with like vignettes.
Storyline?
Yeah. But there's like no transitions. Like, he's in a relationship with like these women, and then we're just, who is this lady? Now he's with this lady. And we just have to accept it somehow. We have no idea how it ended. And then, like, he's in all these different homes. Like, when he's married to Kate Blanchett, they had a home together somewhere out in California.
Yep.
And then he's in these huge condos and stuff like that. And when he's
rich.
It's ridiculous,
though. Well, I think he realized that he wants a character to just simply walk around. And what was the thing that I said when we were watching it? Like, here's how you... location scout for a Terrence Malick movie.
Yeah.
You just go to the brochure kiosk in the hotel and you go, oh, haunted forest. Oh, water slide. Oh, great. And then you just go and do all that stuff.
Well, there's
it's all stuff within like 15 miles of the hotel. And if we ever get stuck, back to the beach.
Right. Well, and I mean, there's this guy that when he's
Tommy Bartlett's Robot World.
That he, like, when he's on a date, I guess, with Natalie Portman's character, they go to, like, a Japanese garden / Chinese garden.
They kept sticking these people in that were friends or, like, professional colleagues. Mm-hmm. This is the guy you're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Giving him advice. But then, of course, and I think I said this before, I don't think... So when he does these long takes, I don't think the actors are even mic'd necessarily. There might be just, like, a boom somewhere. But I don't think that Malick cares what comes out in the dialogue.
Yeah.
So, like, let's say we're doing him and Natalie Portman are making out in the hotel. They don't even make out. They're just wrestling or whatever.
Right.
And then they're laying down and looking at each other. I think that they can just do whatever they want. You know, so you could, like, at one point they could roll over and he'd be like, ow, Christian, you're on my hair. You're never going to hear that on the playback.
No.
He's just going to cut that out and she'll just be saying something. It seems like, oh, she seems like she's upset about something. And then he'll be like, I knew that when I saw her, right?
Yeah.
You could turn the sound off and still watch this movie. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people use that as a compliment for movies. Like something as complicated as The Matrix. If it's made right, you could turn the sound off. You might not know some of the specific things about Zion or whatever, but you would understand, okay, oh, he's fighting these guys. These guys are doing this. When they do this, they learn these things and they can fight. You could totally watch a Malick movie. It might be better if you turned the sound off.
You might be less frustrated.
But it doesn't mean that there's, that kind of means there's no real story here. Less frustrated. Nothing can make you less frustrated.
I don't know.
Let's talk about the party scene.
Oh, you mean like when Terrence Malick just was like, hey, who wants to be in a Terrence Malick film?
Yeah, I think that's how they did that.
And like, we're at Antonio Banderas' house.
It's
I don't know
if random.
It's supposed
yeah.
to be Antonio Banderas.
That's
or
funny
a
because there's funny because there are a lot of actors that are in this, and there are actors that you would recognize.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at the cast list or the IMDb, you know, list
right.
of who's in it, there are a lot of people that you recognize. Some of them have their own names.
Yes.
Like Joe Manganiello's in it,
uh-huh.
and his name is Joe.
Sure.
So he's just credited as Joe. They don't go so far to credit them as themselves.
Right.
But I think you're supposed to just assume this is a Hollywood party.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think he did like, he pulled like a Robert Altman and just, I'm going to shoot like a fake award show and I'll just invite
yes.
a bunch of real actors and they'll all show up in black tie and dresses. In this case, it's just like a, you know, chill hang
right.
LA party. But there are a couple, there are specifically like, there are a lot of comedians in this.
Yes.
Nick Kroll is in this.
Uh-huh.
Presumably as Nick Kroll.
Yes.
I don't know what he's credited as. Nick Offerman actually plays a role, but you don't even see his face. I just knew Nick Offerman was in it because I just knew his voice.
Yes.
Thomas Lennon is in it
uh-huh.
From Reno 911. Joe LaTrulia, another, I'm not sure, he's on Reno, wasn't he?
He's in the
state anyway.
Okay.
And yeah, there's just so many interesting choices, which makes me think. And then Christian Bale, of course, comedy writer.
Right.
Is Terrence Malick like a big like Apatow fan or something? Is
Maybe
he a big
he
comedy
is.
Fan?
Maybe he is.
It's so ironic because his films contain not a shred of comedy.
No, none.
Comedy would be the needle that would pop the balloon
yeah.
of his films.
Yeah.
It isn't like another, I'm trying to think of a good example and all I can think of is like Macbeth right now. I want to think of a modern film, but you have a thing that's like a huge, big tragedy, but there are somehow like comedic moments that sort of let the air out.
Mm-hmm.
Not like a pin in a balloon, but like a release valve.
Right.
His film, the amount of like shoe top navel gazing couldn't survive even the slightest bit of comedy. So why does he like comedians so much? Why does he have so many comics
maybe
in his stuff?
Because it's so drastically different from his work. So maybe he's like, I respect you.
Kinda
I respect
like in,
what you're doing there.
Like when they did The Informant. Soderbergh did The Informant,
mm-hmm.
which is a pretty serious story about the guy who is caught up in the price fixing, you know, with the
right.
corn syrup and all that. And he cast a bunch of comedians like Paul Tompkins and Joel McHale in roles that didn't have any jokes, really.
Yeah.
But just their presence, us knowing them knowing them as comedians and their kind of delivery would bring this kind of serial comic, bring out the absurdity of this
right.
situation about the guy that Matt Damon with a wig and all that.
Right.
Like that?
Yeah, maybe.
Is that it?
Maybe.
And I don't buy it.
You don't think so?
I don't buy it at all.
Maybe it's his own weird little joke in his movie. You know, like, this you know, isn't funny, but there's comedians.
Weird fits? Joke? I don't know. I did like the fact that Jason Clarke, who doesn't play, he plays Johnny. He doesn't even play Jason Clarke.
Okay.
Has no lines that aren't diegetic. And he's in the party scene and he messes around with Christian Bale a lot. And it's like, it's two John Connors in one scene.
Yes.
That's kind of fun.
That is fun. There you go.
All they need to do is get Edward Furlong. Hey, Edward Furlong's here.
There we go.
Yeah. Didn't happen, though. is there anything we're missing?
I don't think so. I just...
Has he long ago slipped into self-parody? Because watching To the Wonder, there are elements where I was like, this is dragging out. But I still kind of see it. Watching this, it's as if somebody, Nick Kroll perhaps, like tried to make a Terrence Malick movie.
It just seems like you mentioned before, just like a college student navel gazing. It seems like, it's tough being a white guy,
yeah.
you know, and
there's nothing particularly profound about it. Like at one point, the carrot is the tower, and that's when he goes and talks to the people that are like, "We're going to make you this big deal. It's going to be
climbing
make so much
these
money.
Stairs.
Oh, the tower is wealth. Oh, I'm so blown away. Yeah. This is like a Cameron Crowe level of symbolism, which I get. This is a Kirk Cameron level of symbolism.
Better. Yeah. I tried to like think of who a female version of Terrence Malick would be. I really don't have a great answer.
That is a great question.
But
could a female mm-hmm. make this film? Well, first of all,
not this
would
film.
They? Probably no. not. But is this, because we've seen this before, I mentioned Cameron Crowe before, who has made some enjoyable movies, but is generally white guy, middle class, possibly usually upper class, doesn't know what to do with his life, Manic Pixie Dream Girl. Like, he invented the Manic Pixie Dream Girl.
Mm-hmm.
She shakes him out of his whatever.
Right.
I'm thinking Garden State. And then he's like, now I'm ready to take on the world. Thanks, you piece of ass. I did it. Right? Now, a woman
yeah.
wouldn't want to make that film. But
no.
I guess my question to you is twofold. Why does that film keep getting made? And two, if they're, imagine in a world like the one, the world on Star Trek, where the women are really tall and the guys wear perfume. If a woman was going to make a movie like that,
mm-hmm.
either exactly like that or the woman version of that, what would it be?
I don't think a woman would make a film exactly like this ever. I just think it's way too self-indulgent.
Right,
and
but is this
way
what,
too navel-gazy.
But is this what dudes do when they go, all right, that was fun, but it's time to think. We're going to think about stuff. Let me think. Sure, it's tough. You know, my dad's yelling at me all the time. Ooh, I think
my brother died.
I think my two young girlfriend, this isn't going to work out. This is hard. This is real hard.
Yeah.
Is like the girl version of that like, we're going to Dubai, girls. Woo!
Wow.
It's like Sex in the City.
Maybe. I actually, so.
Oh, man, do I choose this really rich guy or this really rich guy? Oh! Like that?
I'm going to say no.
They're both they're both shallow. It's easy to, you can just choose your own preference at
yeah.
this point.
I actually think the closest thing that exists to a Terrence Malick film that's very navel-gazy in a female version is perhaps Beyonce's Lemonade.
No,
you don't think so.
If you're talking about sumptuous visuals and possibly ambiguity in like what it's trying to say,
yeah,
maybe. But
yes,
but Beyonce is. Oh,
what?
I think I'm drinking the lemonade.
Uh huh.
But once you add like a racial element. You can't question that at all.
I'm sorry, tall little
Malick,
white guy, that it's so tough.
That's my point. Terrence Malick is saying like, sure, it's tough to be white. Yeah, whatever. Beyonce saying, well, it's tough to be black. There's nothing you can say. Now, she is the richest black woman in the world.
Like, I know.
How tough is it, really? You know what I mean? But we can't say anything. Nobody would try to say anything.
I think she struggles, but she knows that her struggles are different than other people's. But she's also trying to bring other people's struggles to light, if you will.
I want to play for you. Let's see, like Patty Jenkins. If Patty Jenkins was going to make a movie, do you know what I mean? I don't think I've got the answer that I'm looking for from you for the second part of the question. I don't remember the first part anymore. Here's my problem. There aren't enough female filmmakers.
I agree with you.
When there are too many, enough or too many male filmmakers, a male filmmaker can think, ooh, here's a good idea. And it's a film. It's a movie that everybody's had that idea before.
Mm-hmm.
Or he says, you know, I saw Johnny Appleseed's version of this film, and I'm going to tell it better.
Right.
And until we have more female voices, we'll never know the answer to my question.
I didn't say
we'll
it
never
was
know,
exactly. I said that's the closest
we'll
that we
never
have.
Know what a really hack version of like a woman's
right.
version of this story would be.
Yeah. I mean, is it?
Unless it's a Sarah Jessica Parker movie.
Okay.
There we go. I think I did it. Because it's like, let's write a Sarah Jessica Parker movie right now. She's a businesswoman. She works hard.
Mm-hmm.
She's frustrated. She's proud of her accomplishments, but it's causing a problem. She hasn't spent the night with her boyfriend in like 2 weeks. She lives downtown. He lives uptown. You know, it's rough.
Sure.
Holidays coming. Oh, the family. I don't want to see them. Mom fell. She had a stroke. Now she's got to go back. She's got to go upstate.
Uh-huh.
And like, oh boy. And that wacky cousin, you know. And the dog is kind of farty, right? But they connect, and she's like, oh, she gets those pictures out of the attic. She learns, like, oh, take time to slow down. Forget that guy uptown. What about the hunky guy from high school? He's still working. He's still working down the street, you know, at the hardware, at the Five and Dime.
This isn't the same level, though, of hackiness. This is like...
That was pretty hacky.
This is hacky romantic comedy. This right. is not hacky navel gazing.
But all I said was, okay, part of the question was, give me the female version of the navel gazing, but also, what is the female version of this film on the other side? And I think that's it. I think that arty guys like me are supposed to go in and go, so true, the desert, yes. Right? You... Possibly not you, but an example of you, goes into the Sarah Jessica Parker movie and goes, yeah, life is, I should call my mom. Life is like that.
Mm.
Isn't it kind of the same thing?
I don't know if it is. It but, just doesn't seem like it's
be brave
the
and
same
make...
emotional depth
on which,
by any
on which
means.
Side?
On either side. I just don't think it's the same. I don't. I don't think one thing equals the other.
That no, they are separate and not equal.
Yes.
Lemonade. So anyway, yeah, I'm tired of the toxic pixie dream girl.
Yeah,
that's
there
my
you go.
New name for it.
I'm a little tired of it too because like I'm so sick of this. Ooh, this crazy female figure. She's gonna shake up your life, and you're gonna really want to love her and tame her and tie her down. And it's like, bleh.
What did the helicopter represent?
I don't know.
Every once in a while, a helicopter flies over, and I don't know if it's just the cameraman's like squirrel, and or if that's just Malick's like, yeah, just shoot everything. At one point, like a blind guy walks by, and the camera kind of pans to the guy as he goes by, like it's something special. I think it's just a blind guy.
I think it is.
And the cameraman had the direction to just like, just pick out, look, we're going to have millions of feet of footage. You just pick out whatever you think is interesting, and we'll just go with it. But at different points in the film, this helicopter flies over, and I think it's supposed to represent, you know, this hovering feeling of the future coming, and he's on a deadline. He's a writer, you know, and like, and he feels like there's something like kind of pressing down on him.
And he's not really
helicopters
following
mean
the right
kind of
path.
Paranoia. It reminds me of Goodfellas, which is funny because the stripper's name is Karen. So when the helicopter came out, I was like, stir the sauce, Karen! Like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, it made me want to watch Goodfellas while I was watching this other movie. So anyway, I just think that he thinks he's Godard and he's not.
Yeah.
It's he saw Breathless and he's like, no. I know what I'm doing now. And he hasn't grown that type of storytelling at all.
I would like to see him do a different kind of movie.
I'd like to see him do like a sex farce. You know what I mean? I'd like to see him do a John Woo movie. You know, I'd like to see him do anything other than this. I'd like to see him do an animated pet movie.
Yeah, I'd like to see him do other things too. Because I'm kind of sick of the same thing, more or less.
The last word of the movie, begin.
It's so hacky.
Yeah.
It just is.
So
we end at the beginning.
Yeah.
Beginning's the end.
I'm cool with rejecting traditional narrative and storytelling. Like, I love, here, I'll get farty on you, arty farty. I love La Jetée. That's great. That is compelling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like other Terrence Malick movies. I like The Tree of Life. And this was a labor, too, of love, I guess. But this was shot in 2011, which you can tell when you see, check out this new show. It's called The Newsroom on billboards. Or like Blake Lively's Savages. Oh,
yeah.
It's going to be a big hit.
Yeah.
Taylor Kitsch. And then he worked on it for like 2 years in post-processing to get it all together and basically, you know, made the stories in the cut, as it has to be for this kind of
film.
He
must have had so much raw footage.
Oh, for sure. Oh, I mean, there's a 20-hour version of this somewhere. Ugh. And then released it and people were like, yep. How do you think he feels when that happens? He must just go, next one, moving on.
I don't know how he feels because he like, you know, took a hiatus from Hollywood for a really long time and then he came back and now he's just been doing the same story over and over again.
Yep. And also, I'll say this. It's distributed by a company called Broad Green Pictures, which I was like, what's that? When we saw that in the studio trailers.
Yeah.
It is a company that's put together by a former VP of Warner Brothers. And it is not a major player, really. They do a lot of smaller films, which is great. They have produce things with co-distribution deals with Amazon Studios and Miramax and stuff. So they are a smaller thing that is taking chances on stuff.
Sure, which is good.
Yeah, well, it is good. Sometimes it's Knight of Cups, because if he had pitched Knight of Cups to any studio executive, they'd be like, no. But Christian Bale's in it. I don't care. I'm not going to... Plus, how do you even like sell it to somebody? Like, let me see a script. There's no script. No, we're not doing this.
Right.
So it's clear that he had to go to somebody like this.
Yeah.
They've done other stuff like Green Room, which was one of...
Oh,
What's
with
his name?
Patrick Stewart and...
Anton Yelchin's last films.
Yes.
Which is like a kind of horror action movie film that was pretty well regarded. Neon Demon, Nicholas Winding Refn's last weirdo movie was done through them. So... It's kind of like Little Good, Little Bad. They're doing Bad Santa 2 with Miramax. Again, another movie that's like cult hit, semi-success, the first one.
Sure.
Why would you spend, 15 years later do a sequel? Because what the hell else is Billy Bob doing?
Money.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So anyway, I don't know what the point I'm trying to make. I'm just saying it's clear that Hollywood as an institution was essentially saying no thank you.
Yes. And it's clear that he didn't get the backing of a major studio for this,
right.
So it just doesn't speak very well to the movie itself.
Yeah, nobody really believed in this. This was also shot, I think the financing was also tied to his next film called Weightless.
Okay.
Which is also being distributed by Broadgreen, and it...
Okay.
And it stars Ryan Gosling.
Okay.
Christian Bale.
Okay.
Kate Blanchett, Natalie Portman, Michael Fassbender. All of the up for anything, turn down for what, you just tell me where to go, Terry. Oh, you're not going to tell me anything, Terry? All right, let's just shoot this thing. I got paid scale. That was fun. Now what?
So wait, so was it filmed simultaneously to Knight of Cups? Because I feel like I read that somewhere. Or is it coming out after?
You mean Weightless?
Yeah, was Weightless filmed around the same time? Because I'm just kind of surprised that Christian Bale, after... doing Knight of Cups, would be like, oh yeah, I'll do another dance.
It was shot, yeah. It was shot basically like back to back.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm sure they wrapped up, it took about 7 weeks to shoot Knight of Cups, and then it's probably, I think Weightless is supposed to be set in the South.
Okay.
I don't actually know a lot about it. Or set in Texas, I think.
Okay.
Which works out for Malick, because that's his kind of home base. So yeah, I'm sure they just did that, and then Christian Bale just got on a plane and went to Texas, and he's like, I hope there's a script this time. No script. Okay, great. I'm trapped in hell. Why am I doing this? I wish I could be Batman again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you recommend Knight of Cups?
No, I would not. And I just, I was frustrated watching this, and I don't enjoy watching movies that frustrate me. So I would not recommend this. I also just want to mention really briefly, this is the third Christian Bale movie we've done for Craft to Services.
What does that mean?
I feel like that means that Christian is not either, we really like Christian Bale and we don't care if he's in crappy movies, or B, he doesn't really pick great movies all the time. It could be both.
One of those movies is Rain of Fire, and I think a lot of people would say that was a good movie. I think we said it was a good movie.
Well, I think it's enjoyable.
What do you
enjoyably
want?
Bad.
Well, all right.
I actually liked Equilibrium. I know you kind of changed your tone about Equilibrium after we saw it again, but
Equilibrium is understandable. Maybe Rain of Fire is too, but that's the movie that a young breakout star. Breakout. I mean, he's been doing this since he was a fetus. But I mean, as an adult, a kid who's coming out.
Yeah.
He's got American Psycho in the bag. Is that before or after? Anyway, same time. And it's like, oh, what's hot? The Matrix. Okay, I'll do it. Like, well, that sounds good. And then later on, you realize, oh my God, Kurt Wimmer's crazy, and he's gonna kill us all in our sleep. Like, he's gonna come right into my trailer and kill me. And then you just fine. Limited release, nobody cares, everybody's gonna forget about this thing, let's move on.
Right.
You don't want to talk to me about Batman. That's what that is. I'm gonna lose 60 pounds and play the machinist.
Sure.
That sort of thing. I'm trying to crack down on these conditional things. Like, I'm really big into the tough choice.
Okay.
And so I'm supposed to do a up or down, but
yes,
I'm gonna break that rule.
Okay.
Like Terrence Malick, and say that no, don't watch this movie. Unless you want to see how not to do it. Let's say somebody that you're somebody who is like a a film buff or a film student.
Sure.
Somebody who really wants to make a mark. And in so doing, as many people do, want to draw on what's come before, but then change it, improve upon it, as the French New Wave filmmakers did, as Quentin Tarantino did, watching the French New Wave filmmakers, mm-hmm. and just going on and so on and so forth. This is a good way to not do it. Or this is a good way to see how rotten the apple has gotten and we need to pick a new fruit.
Yeah.
But otherwise don't. Or if you like have the same taste in chicks.
Come on. Is it really worth it? I mean, it's, no. I mean, you're watching like a 2-hour music video with like, you know, voiceover.
It is. Hey, if you've got fantasies about rolling around on the floor of hotel rooms, fully clothed.
Go ahead.
Yes. Or walking into the ocean, 3-piece suit on.
Yep.
That's the hotness.
Yep.
That's what you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if those things are true about you, I say keep it up. Oh, thank God we are done with that. And I don't see us returning anytime soon to the work of Terrence Malick. But too bad. It's too bad.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what we are going to do.
What are we going to do, Cal?
We are getting to the end of this probably ill-considered segment where we talk about writing and films. And we are pretty much done with it now. We got to do Christmas.
Yes.
As we move into December, our first Craft to Services show in the month of December, screw it. It's cliched. We're going to do it. We're going to talk about Christmas movies.
Mm-hmm.
These are movies that are not necessarily about Christmas, but they are set at Christmas.
Sure.
And so the first one that we're going to do, we got to reward ourselves right out of the gate, I think. We're going to do Jingle All the Way.
All right.
All right.
I'm excited. I've never seen it before.
That's your response. All right. You've never seen Jingle All the Way?
I have not.
Is this just like, should we change the name of this to The Education of Mika? The filmic education of Mika?
No, we should not.
Jingle All the Way is, obviously, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes.
Sinbad. Remember him?
Yes, I do.
And one of Phil Hartman's last movies?
Oh, Phil Hartman.
Yes. And it is 17% on Rotten Tomatoes. Okay, so you do the scale, you do the stats, right? It's like baseball. Like, who's like the losingest coach of all time? Does it, length of service counts, right? Like, if you can be, let's say, a college coach for 19 years mm-hmm. and you put up a 10 to 15% win rate like every year.
Sure.
But they can't replace you because, you know, who cares? It's like a small college or whatever. They can't afford anybody else. Good, fine. But what if like you fail and you fail huge and you fail singularly and that's about it? That's the story of Jake Lloyd.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Jake Lloyd has, and we'll talk about this on the next show, but he's got Jingle All the Way. He's got The Phantom Menace, which technically probably is far above 50% on Rotten Tomatoes by virtue of being Star Wars. But a kid who has never, as far as you know, been in a good movie.
Yeah.
Jake Lloyd, Jingle All the Way, next time on Craft of Services. So there you go. Painful, but so is medicine. Surgery. Oh. Surgery is painful.
Do we have a spoonful of sugar to help the go down?
We do.
Is that called Jingle All the Way?
Well, that'll be it's a spoonful of peppermint candy cane.
Woohoo!
Delicious. And so on and so forth. But yeah, the good news is that life goes on and you can continue to follow us in our journey through these awful but fascinating films on social media.
Doing
you
this
can follow
ourselves.
Us on. No, we're going to suffer for our art, so other people don't have to. But maybe they've watched the films as well. So we apologize for that. Tell us how much you hate us on Facebook and on Twitter and our other social media outlets. I want to remind you, if you're listening to this early on Monday, which you probably are, if you've downloaded it and are going to work or doing what you do, it's Cyber Monday, which means you can get all the great deals online through places like Amazon and stuff. And if you're shopping on Amazon, we'd appreciate it if you go to our page. JustEnoughTrope.com, spelled like it sounds, and we have a banner where you can click. It's actually a pinned post, I believe, top of the page. You can click through that. There's an Amazon banner. If you click on that, it'll take you to Amazon. But the thing is that it sort of earmarks it. Like Amazon knows that you clicked on our ad. Mm-hmm. And so then when you buy something from Amazon, we get a little kickback. Now, it doesn't cost anything more for you. It's the exact same price. Great service, great shipping, great selection, just like you your normal Amazon experience. But we get, you know, a little bit off of there to keep the lights on over here, and we would really appreciate that. It's a pretty good program. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I'd say go to iTunes if you haven't already and subscribe to the show. It's the best way to get the show. That way it comes right to you when it's ready, and there ain't no walking around on the beach. Shoes.
Optional
possibly. Mm-hmm. I bet Tom James is like, man, I was up for that role.
No.
Guy's never got shoes on.
But he's always walking around.
But you get the show immediately. You have to be like, oh my Lord, when will that show come? Comes to you right away. And that's what you want. And give us a review while you're there. We love hearing from the fans and love hearing about the torture that we're putting you through mm-hmm. by talking about these stupid movies. We'll reevaluate January 1st and decide if we're going to keep doing this because there is a psychic toll.
A little bit.
Yeah, and I can't make change. And give us a rating while you're on iTunes. A high rating, s'il vous plaît. Because when we get a high rating from you, we move up in the ranks. And iTunes knows we're doing a good job. We get to be exposed to more people in a good way, not in a bad way.
Right.
And that's what our show lives and thrives on. So give us 5 aimless walks on an empty beach at Magic Hour. It just goes on and on and on. Look, I'm all for art films, but I think art films, unless your name is Warhol, should be like so long. Like, I made my point. Yay. At one point, he and Natalie Portman go to a modern art museum. And then there's all this modern art like videos being played. Like a guy's like making things with his hands. And you're like, wow. This is kind of like when you turn a camera on a TV that's hooked up to the TV and it just goes. It's like the infinite mirror trick.
Uh-huh.
That's what it's like.
Yep, that's exactly what
Was he calling out like, see, that's what I'm doing. This is like, you're watching an art film that's 2.5 hours long.
I really hope he wasn't pointing it out, but he probably was.
I really hope they start charging him by the megabyte. Because in the old days, you couldn't shoot forever. Film's expensive.
Right.
Forget all that. Just give us 5 stars so you can stay out of the inner workings of Terrence Malick's creative mind. That's it. We're going to cut it off for tonight. We are going to come back on Friday with another comic book club. We're talking Greg Rucka's Lazarus, an exciting comic from Image Comics that is, well, like we said, it's very similar to Ghost in the Shell, which we didn't plan, but it features a cybernetically enhanced assassin in a dystopic future working for a giant corporation / government. And it's pretty cool. You like them strong female characters.
Oh, yeah.
She gets her katana. She gets out there and she goes, my life. No, it's not like that at all. And we're also going to feature an interview with author Elizabeth Baer. You heard it. I would drop the mic, but I would break it and there'd be no show. So we need to hold on to that. But we are really excited to bring that to you. So I hope you come back for that. We're done. We got to go. That's it. That's it. We're going to sign off for now. I'm your host, Caliban.
I'm your co-host, Mikan Hanna.
Keep the geek fires burning.